are listening to Affirmations for Living with Edvige, where each week you're invited to join in our upbeat discussion as we look deeper into spiritually based principles that can change your life. We know that change can open doorways to new beginnings, and we are dedicated to helping you make the changes needed to improve your life. And now, here is your host, Reverend Dr. Edvige. Hello, everyone, and welcome in today. Yes, indeed, this is Affirmations for Living. Know that you are loved and appreciated for tuning in, because I realize there are many places you could be. So I thank you for tuning in this moment, for it is my goal, my desire to bring you tools to empower, to uplift, and to inspire you to be the best that you can be, and to help you take control of your life, to understand that everything you are experiencing is because you are creating it. And together, we can begin to create the life that you want consciously. And of course, if you like what you hear, please share it with your friends and family. Today is a really special show, and it's entitled How to Survive Life and Death. My guest today is Robert Kopecky. Have you found yourself doing something you never imagined you'd be doing? Something you could never have foreseen in your wildest imagination? Well, that's how Robert Kopecky felt writing his book about things no one really wants to talk about, inspired by experiences he never dreamed of having. So Robert has not had one, but three near-death experiences. Think about that for a moment. Three. As the listeners know, I've had one, and one was enough. But imagine having three. So How to Survive Life and Death is grounded in these different experiences. These meaningful and unexpectedly fun how-to is what his book is all about. And of course, his goal is to put our mortality into perspective, to deflate the inevitable fears, and supply lots of useful material for life improvement. How to Survive Life and Death is written by someone who's been there with a sensibility to designed to disarm the doubter. So without further ado, Robert, welcome in, and thank you for being here.
Thank you very much, Dr. Edvige. It's so nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. You know, for me, my first question to someone is always, how did you get into this information? What has your spiritual journey looked like for you?
Well, it's been kind of circuitous. You know, the fact is I have had these three near-death experiences, and you would imagine that it might only take one for
yes.
most people. And so just at that, it's a little bit unusual. But it's been kind of, I've had kind of a strangely mystical life from the get-go, really. When I was just a little boy, I grew up on the border of San Diego and Mexico, and kind of caught some sort of folk mysticism in my childhood. I traveled into Mexico a lot, and as a kid, I explored the ruins there, and I've been to the Mayan underworld and the Aztec ruins, and I've been through the South Pacific. I remember just recently, in fact, that my mother actually took us hunting for Bigfoot in 1966, this was. So this is way before Bigfoot was the big star that he is now, right? You know. So I had a lot of these kind of. I was present for the Phoenix Lights, which was a sort of a mass UFO thing.
And I remember that.
And I was in New York City at 9/11. I've ended up being in a lot of places that have had a lot of spiritual significance, I think, and. All of this stuff, including the three near-death experiences, which really happened over 15 years of my life, all basically coalesced into this calling to write this book after about 10 years or so of following a spiritual path, of turning my life around really, and following a spiritual path, and studying and meditating and doing service and all of that kind of good stuff. In meditation, I really got the message that I needed to start writing, and I did, and yeah.
So as a child growing up, you know, studying Bigfoot and so forth, as a child growing up, what was it like for you? Did you know that there was something more, that there was something bigger? And then my next question is, was your family religious or were you more spiritual?
Yeah, my family was not religious at all. In fact, I had a kind of a rough childhood. My father was an alcoholic, and was a lapsed Catholic. He was left-handed, and so he always had a huge resentment against the church because of the way they treated him when he was a kid because he was left-handed. And so he really kind of took it out on all religion. And so religion was not really something that was promoted in our household at all.
Okay.
My mother basically kind of acquiesced to him, and I was raised in a situation where a lot of adults were not really behaving responsibly, you know, a lot of the time, which is a fairly common childhood for a lot of people, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But I do remember as a kid, you know, wondering if this was how it was supposed to be, if this is all that there is, kind of, you know, And I developed kind of an isolated life where I drew and wrote and, you know, I created things. I ended up becoming an animation designer, which is what I am by trade. So I've designed a lot of animation for television shows, kids' TV shows, and television credits and things like that. But I kind of sat by myself a lot and spent a lot of time in nature as soon as I could. I grew up on the outskirts of San Diego, and I would just kind of disappear into the canyons with my cat and go out to where I now consider the membrane to the divine as being much thinner than it is in the city.
So true.
And so I kind of absorbed a spirituality that way. I started seeking a lot of things when I was quite young. I have an older brother and sister, and I got interested in their books, which were largely or often about things like existentialism.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was just like 12 years old or so, I was reading these, you know, books on existentialism and the like. And I started to develop an interest of my own, and I dated a young woman who was a Mormon when I was a teenager, and I got baptized as a Mormon because of my experience with the sort of system that they had. Mm-hmm. I had never been in an organized religious system before, and I found it very refreshing and supportive. That didn't last very long. You know, I moved on from that.
Mm-hmm.
And then for most of my life, I really did not practice any kind of religion, and didn't. While I may have known that I was spiritual, since we all really are, and had an inkling of being on a spiritual search, I did not think of myself as, you know, a spiritual person, or you know, follow spiritualism or leaders or read the books or anything like that until much later in my life.
Wow, that's so interesting. You know, for a lot of people, I would say star seeds, I'm feeling that you're one. For a lot, life as a child, it's so similar. It's very interesting to see the similarities. Quite interesting. Let me ask you this. You claim to have had 3 near-death experiences. Were they different from each other, or were they all pretty much the same?
No, they were all different from one another. They
mm-hmm.
were not dissimilar to what you may have heard before. I mean, they each of them falls into kind of a typical format for near-death experiences, but they were all distinctive from one another. My first one was a disembodiment. Was one where I became free of my body. I was in a car accident, and just the next moment I was, you know, high up above, about the level of a street lamp, looking down mm-hmm. on the scene and witnessing the people in the neighborhood running out and calling an ambulance and the ambulance coming and loading me into it, and I tried to talk to people, but they couldn't hear me. And then I was not alone. I never confronted the presence I was with. They were always kind of behind me and sort of shepherded me into this kind of a soft, warm sort of fog. And I ended up being in a sort of a pastoral setting, kind of like an outdoor cafe or something, in the midst of a really interesting kind of interview where a lot of important things were sort of hashed out. I don't remember the exact details of it, but it was, you know, the whole experience was, as is often mentioned by near-death experiencers, very wonderful. You know, it was very warm and without gravity and without the pressures of sequential thought, kind of, you know, I was kind of free. I felt part of a holistic intelligence, and I felt love, and you know, the sort of feeling that I've only felt a couple of times since in my deepest meditations, I think, or was how I felt. But so that was
so
kind of a classic.
What happened
near-death
then
experience, you know?
When you came back into your body, what was that like?
Well, it was rough because this life is not easy. Basically, you know, I think that everybody who's had these experiences will report that. And in my third near-death experience, not to jump too far forward, but that was kind of the issue. When I came back into my body after about 18 or 20 hours that I was unconscious in my first one, the
wow.
car accident.
Mm-hmm.
I was alone in a hospital room, and I had my head heavily bandaged, and they kept me for the better part of that day, and then they wheeled me out to the curb and put me in a cab that drove me home. I didn't have health insurance and stuff, and I imagine that's how it all happened, but nobody really spoke to me very much or anything about it. But the strange thing is that I didn't really learn at that profound lesson that we are spiritual beings having a physical experience. Mm-hmm. I snapped right back into my ego life. I began immediately worrying about the car, about circumstances, about what people would say, and I kind of suppressed the whole experience until many years later.
So then the second one happened. So it's like, hello, wake up call. So then what was that experience like, the second one?
Well, a lot happened in between the two experiences. You know, one really major thing that happened was that I had had a very beautiful and very funny aunt growing up as a child, my Aunt Ruth, who took care of me. And she used to kind of take me away, Calgon. She used to kind of take me away from the circumstances of my difficult childhood, and we would travel together, and I would stay with her and stuff, and she was really wonderful to me. Well, at some point in between the first near-death experience and the second near-death experience, my first wife and I took off for a year and traveled around the world, and that was kind of spiritual in a way, too, because we went to lots of cathedrals and lots of ruins, and had a lot of synchronicitous encounters with interesting people and the like. When we returned, we came back almost at the right or the wrong time, as it may be, for me to be at the bedside of my Aunt Ruth when she died. And it was a kind of a medical misadventure that caused it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of sent me for a loop. It sort of knocked me out of my tracks a little bit. And I started to kind of act out in my life and to live kind of a riotous life, hanging around with the wrong people and doing the wrong things. I pretty much destroyed my first marriage. And I ended up living this life that was, you know, not at all ideal, to put it
counterproductive.
You know, it was, but then on the other hand, you know, sometimes the destruction has to take place for the growth to happen, you know?
Yes,
I think
so
that's
true.
Where the where the kind of beauty of sadness and pain can come from is that they're transformative. These are transformative times where our heart's engaged, right?
Mm-hmm. True.
And I needed that. My second near-death experience was a result of that kind of lifestyle. It was basically a toxic reaction to what I was doing, and I ended up out on the floor, just completely collapsed. And I entered into, the room filled in with a bright white cloud. It was kind of like you described to me earlier, just a holding place.
Mm-hmm.
That was like being inside of a brightly lit white cloud.
Absolutely.
Now, in this one, a screen opened up in front of me, just like peeled open in front of me, and began, again, this is another typical kind of a near-death experience. A lot of people have this experience. It started showing me scenes from my life. And wow. Not the greatest hits, you know, not the not the best of reel, but these pivotal, sort of seminal, formative moments that I may have suppressed, that I possibly had the chance to learn something from, but I apparently hadn't. Kind of, you know, and they were shown to me sequentially one after another with no judgment at all. I felt no shame. I just witnessed them and realized this sense of the moments of our life, the interactions that we have in the moment with one another and how critical they can be to our spiritual growth.
Wow. And so you came out of that, and at that point, did you make choices to change some of the things you were doing? Did you learn from that experience, or did you continue down that path?
Yeah, I continued down my path, apparently.
Well, all
paths.
It
didn't really change dramatically, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid I didn't. I just needed more, I guess. I have a particularly hard head or something. I don't recommend this, Dr. Edzige, to anybody, really. This is not the best means of self-realization that I can think of. But I may have made some adjustments in my life and started to really yearn for the change that I felt was imminent or necessary in my life. I was trying to restructure things, and at that point I kind of had a lot of success in terms of my career, which made things a little more difficult too, because the externals were all there for me, you know. I felt like things must be going good because on the outside they appeared to be going good. But it wasn't true. It really wasn't the case. And the third near-death experience I had was I was in the midst, really, of trying to change my life. I had decided that I was going to get married and settle down and live a proper life, grow up, you know. And I moved from New York City out to Arizona, and I went to a Super Bowl function in this small university town that I was in. And when I left that, I called my fiance, and at the time I was calling her on a payphone, which tells you how long ago that was. That was back in the late 90s. I was assaulted by a skinhead. I don't know if you know what skinheads are, but they're these sort of disaffected sort of Nazi quasi-military.
Yes, I remember back then when they were popular.
Yeah. And ultimately I was knocked unconscious and sort of stomped and beaten by a big group of skinheads. That experience was not, it wasn't as good, it was my least favorite of them all.
If you had to pick.
Which is a strange way to put it, right?
Yeah.
And you got three, I guess that's how it goes. But also the sort of afterlife, the peek behind the curtain wasn't as pleasant. I was not in a light place. I didn't feel all of the warmth and comfort. I felt safe. I felt secure. I felt protected, and I was not alone. But I had not apparently done things the right way up to that point. I hadn't exited the right way. I had things left to do. And even though I wanted to stay very badly, I wanted to find the peace that I had before, I was very gently forced back into this life, so to speak. And after what was about 4 hours of being unconscious on the street, I woke up looking into the eyes of an emergency medical technician who said, "He's back." And that was the third one.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know,
now that sent me into my transformational path. You know, it didn't take too much longer after that. What really happened is that I came to this dark night of the soul where everything in my external life, regardless of whatever success I had, stopped working for me.
Mm.
It just all kind of collapsed to me. And I had that moment of clarity where I felt grace in my life and I was told that there was another way, and it just happened. I turned around and I became incredibly interested in reading religious texts and stuff like that, you know, and off I was to the races and
that's
started
so
writing
interesting.
Not long after that.
So, okay, I had a guest last year. She had 6 near-death experiences.
Wow.
Yes. And now she had spiritual gifts, and she did not want to acknowledge them. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, plane crash, car accident, you name it, she had experienced it.
I guess so.
And on
wow.
the sixth one, they took her into the light and said, "Look, we've given you these gifts. You've not acknowledged them. You have a choice to come home or to go back and do the work that you're there to do." And she chose to come back, and she finally acknowledged her gifts. And that's what shifted her. And then for me, it was the one near-death experience going into light, the angel showing up and saying, "You're here to bring them into the light." And I took that right away, and they started showing up every 10 days doing things to help me awaken and to receive the gifts that I have to heal and to transmute things. And so it's so interesting to have 3 separate people experiencing their awakening in similar ways. And, you know, it shows that we have free will throughout the entire thing. You can get it on the first try, like me. You can get it after the third, like you. Or you can really be stubborn and take 6 tries, right? And so
yes,
to the listening
wow.
audience, hear that, because we all had these experiences that caused us to, well, our fork in the road. And so it behooves you, really, to get it as quickly as you can, because there's so much you could have done differently to expand so much faster. You know, with the timelines that we're in and we have, our awakening, those who really have these particular gifts, it's so important that you get it as quickly as possible. Now,
yeah.
In your book, some people have, you know, fantastic near-death experiences. Like mine, you know, I just went into the light. It was a wonderful holding space. I felt love. Nothing flashed before my eyes. It was just peaceful. The angel showed up, bring people into the light. Okay, fine. Why doesn't your book have anything like that?
Well, I think you're kind of just describing it somewhat, you know, and that's that if nothing else, the life of continuing consciousness, which I believe is continuous, right,
mm-hmm.
It has a lot of variety, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of various ways for us to manifest the world that we live in our lives. Think of all the different ways that people experience life in this world. You know, it can be incredibly diverse. And in the worlds to come, there's no reason for that not to be the case also. You know, mm-hmm. obviously, it depends an awful lot on what we carry in to it, on
sure.
how we engage with our imaginations to it, and how we, you know, marshal the lessons that we've learned to, you know, manifest the lives that we imagine. So I think that that's probably the I don't pretend to know, really, but mm-hmm. I think that that's probably the best explanation for all of those kinds of differences.
Absolutely.
Something that has registered with me very powerfully is that I can experience heaven here, you know, that oftentimes in our lives, if we're paying attention, we can be in a place or with a person or people where we really are experiencing heaven. We're really engaged with our hearts, you know, and so it's always possible wherever we are to have that kind of transcendent experience of our unity and of love. And the differences in terms of sort of technically what's different, I think has an awful lot to do with each of our own individual lives. I didn't experience a loss of my individuality in any of these occasions, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as though I was completely obliterated or dissolved into the great field of consciousness. I still felt like myself. You know, I felt much more attached to everything and much more a part of everything. But, you know, I think if what you're fearing is obliteration and loss of consciousness, so don't worry about it, because that's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's not like that at all. Yeah,
right.
You're very aware. A lot of your book doesn't seem to be about near-death experiences or dying as much as it's about how to live. Why is that?
Well, you know, if we recognize, as I suggest, and as all near-death experiencers do, and, you know, just the idea of spirituality, that there is this great invisible spiritual mechanism alive just beneath the surface of this reality that we mm-hmm. experience on a daily, in the daily grind, so to speak, then there are ways that we can connect with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Prayer or meditation. There are principles that we can live by that allow us to break through that barrier and to merge the two lives. You know, we have two histories, right? We have the sort of dates and facts and bank account numbers and stuff like that kind of a history. And then we also have a spiritual history of what has happened to us in our hearts and how we've grown and progressed on our path. And there are kind of tried and true methods that we can access that greater spiritual life
mm-hmm.
in this life and bring it
absolutely,
you know, bring it into this
forward
life with great
yeah.
effects. Yeah.
And
you know, I have these three tips for happiness, being radical kindness, radical forgiveness, and radical surrender. And they're really shorthand for these kinds of doors into the spiritual,
mm-hmm.
Kind of. You know, where if you are as absolutely kind, and I like to present this to people as a challenge, if you force yourself, if you try
force
as hard
yourself.
As you can.
Now, is that funny that we would have to force ourselves to be kind and loving? Wow.
Well, you know, there's an awful lot of people, and I'm sure that you are one of them, for whom this is not a challenge at all, and you're just incredibly kind people to start with. You know, those aren't really necessarily the people I'm talking to. They already kind of know this trick intuitively. But for me, I need sometimes to really try to be as absolutely kind to everyone that I meet, no matter who they are, no matter what the situation is, at work or shopping or wherever I am, commuting, you know, which can be a difficult time. I just imagine myself as being that other person, and I enter into an agreement with them to experience life through the filter of kindness, you know. And an amazing transformation takes place in your life, I guarantee it, if you do that. You suddenly find yourself in the presence of all kinds of friends and compatriots, and synchronicities start happening that, you know, I've had people hand me things that I didn't know that I needed until I needed them by people that I didn't know were even there. You know, stuff like that.
You know what? And here, I really want the audience to hear this, because what you're speaking to is agape love. It is the highest form of love. It's spiritual love. And that's where we have to move to. We get into the tiny space of our heart, and we love all, because we recognize that we are all one. And so it's easy to be kind to those people that we like, to those people that we're similar to, that we look the same and we have the same sort of job or what have you, the same sort of status. But it takes a lot to step outside of that and to be kind to everyone, to those who look different, to those who have a different echelon in life. And that's where it really counts, to acknowledge everyone equally and to love all fairly. And when we can do that, then we've really stepped into being spiritual beings having a physical experience. And that's what this really is all about.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. We really recognize, we can recognize that we're all basically the same thing, right? I mean, if you're standing in line at the supermarket, you're trying to pick a good cashier to go to at the supermarket, right?
Yes.
And so you pick a line, and it always ends up being the slowest line, right? There's always somebody has a problem paying their bill or something. If you could hear the thoughts of everybody in that line, everyone would be essentially saying the same thing to themselves, right? Don't they know what they're doing up there? What's wrong with this line? How come it always happens to me? What, don't they realize I'm waiting here? You know, it's right. It would sound like chorus, like in unison.
Well, now you know what though. I have to say this. Understanding consciousness and that we're the creators of everything. Actually, for me, when I go into a line, I say I always segment intend everything that I'm doing. And so for me, as I'm approaching the line, I always go into the store with, okay, universe, let me find everything I need efficiently. Okay, universe, I'm moving to the checkout now. Put me in the shortest line and let me go through with ease. And I'll tell you, it's the funniest thing to watch, because I'll have a cashier who's just standing around, all of a sudden come and take my cart and say, here you go, and I'll be the first one. And so it really is about recognizing just how energy flows and works, and that we're energy, and that we have to, when we really begin to get it, we tap into it and it flows for us, because we get to co-create. We're co-creators, and so we really can have so much more of an impact and really have that heaven on earth when we surrender.
Right, and that's what this this engagement in love is, that radical kindness. You're projecting that out into the world, right? And so you're attracting that back. The world
yes,
really
it changes
that.
Everything for you, yes.
Yeah, it really does. I was just using that as a hypothetical to kind of indicate to people that we're often all of the same mind, that we really are the same thing, kind of, so that when you're dealing with people, if you are able to look at them without judgment or comparison whatsoever, even without any labels, you know, if you don't even think to yourself, or if you try to prevent yourself from thinking about what they look like or, you know, what your first impression is of them, then when you deal with them with that, in that open-hearted way, engaged in the field of agape love, like you're saying, you can mm-hmm. see the person and their struggles and what may have formed their psyche and how they want to express themselves. It all arises, you know, kind of clearly to you. And you can engage in what I like to call compassionate consciousness.
Yes.
All right, which is what radical kindness really helps you to do. So it's just a trick. Give it a try for a day or two and watch how it'll change your life.
Yeah,
right, because it really is transformative to enter into that, you know, invisible fabric of kindness that's alive in the world. I have a chapter in my book called Love is the Medium, the Small, and the Large, because I really believe that love is one of the main mediums, or almost like a quantum field of life, right? All the beautiful things arise from it. Its lack is what causes all the difficult aspects of life. And
true.
If we can engage in it by opening our hearts and living that way, you know, life becomes quite magical, like you're describing.
So true. So true.
Yeah.
So then let me ask you, what did nearly dying three times teach you about living?
Well, that that you don't really die, right?
Mm.
I mean, obviously you do really die to this life. But it taught me that our souls kind of require a death experience, so to speak, for our spiritual growth, and that, you know, if I was a part of consciousness before I came into my earth body, into my human body, and it continues after I'm in my earth body, then it's all part of a kind of an eternal process, but not where eternity is some great long period of time, but where eternity is the eternal moment that we live in now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wherever we are. That was probably one of the main things that it taught me, was being able to release my fixation on the material aspects of this world and my body concerns and all of that kind of stuff, and start to fuse the two aspects of my life, the material and the spiritual, that this is all a spiritual life. We are taking part in a spiritual life, right?
True.
Yeah.
True.
So that's probably the main thing. You know,
mm-hmm.
finally, after three times, I got the message.
Okay, so if death is natural, and we know that it is, why then do you believe it's so scary?
Well, you know, I think a lot of that is instinct, you know, and I also think that it's that fear of being obliterated, of losing consciousness, the fear of losing consciousness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And just like any animal alive in this world who is expressing consciousness in the form that they're in, the form that we're in as humans have fears about the unknown.
Mm.
You know, so what I'm trying to pass on, and other people who've had experiences like me, I think we're all trying to pass on, is that the fear, as much as possible, as much as you can possibly diffuse it, is, you know, it's not really necessary. The deaths that I experienced, and obviously I'm still alive, so I didn't actually die, but the experiences that I had happened suddenly. I didn't have a prolonged illness. They were unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, they occurred as rather amazing experiences. They were
mm-hmm.
quite beautiful, quite remarkable. You know,
I would agree.
I don't remember the
yeah.
worst part of them, really.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, I would have to say, for me, in that car accident, going into the light was so peaceful and so loving. And, you know, looking back, I don't think I would want it any other way. It was just
right.
absolutely a beautiful experience. And for the angels to come and say, you're here to bring them into the light, the whole thing was just beautiful. And, you know, there were injuries afterward, but
yeah,
I recovered. And it's just been amazing, and it really is beautiful to have
yeah.
had an experience
now,
like that.
You know, I don't want to, you know, condone suicide, right?
Oh gosh, no.
We're
not talking that. We're not saying that at all.
Like I said before, you know, heaven is here too. The
mm-hmm.
experience of heaven is here. I do condone suicide in this sense. That sometimes during the course of our life, there are parts of ourself that have to die. There are aspects or periods of our life that have to end and that we have to move from.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean by the soul, you know, requiring a death experience, so to speak, and what we were talking about earlier, that some people really need that to be able to transform and expand into a higher consciousness.
Absolutely. Basically, we have to let go of all of those things no longer serving our best and highest good. We came forth and we've mastered lack, limitation, fear, guilt, shame, doubt, pain. All of these things have to be transmuted. They all have to die so that we can rise up like the phoenix, stepping into who we are as divine beings. And we can't take those things with us. And so we have to let them go. And that really is death to those things not serving us anymore. Not easy, but it's what has to happen.
No, but we get a lot of practice at it, don't we?
Yes, indeed we do.
I mean, it happens over and over during life, and in my particular situation, or the woman you were talking about who had six near-death experiences,
six.
Then,
yeah.
I mean, it actually happened to her that many times, too. But, I mean, it can be just in a moment sometimes. It can just be the smallest thing that happens in the course of a day. It's like, oh, that's over. I'm moving on from that, right?
That's the wonderful thing. It doesn't have to be severe, you know,
right.
Like a car accident or anything, because at the time, that's where we were vibrationally speaking, and so that's what we experienced. But as I often say, if your vibration is high enough and you still need to, you know, expand, it could be as simple as breaking a fingernail that causes you to be like, oh, wow, let me let that energy of that go so I can step into who I truly am. So it doesn't have to be this this monumental, horrific accident, but
absolutely.
That's where we were at the time, a vibrational match too. So that's
right,
why
yeah.
It happened
and
that way.
I do talk about dying from this life as a form of matriculation, you know, it's kind of like graduating day. When we think about a graduate from high school or college or something, a young person, we don't talk about their having achieved so much in high school that now it's over and, you know, that's it.
You can retire now.
Right. We talk about the great potential that they have with the life ahead of them. And it's the same thing for dying from this life, too. I think it's a kind of a matriculation, you know, we're going to take what we have learned here and move on.
Wow. And that's beautiful. If we can really come to grips with that and be comfortable with that, it's a beautiful idea on it, quite honestly.
Sometimes it's just packing up those boxes and moving to a different city and taking a different job. You know what I mean? It can be like that in our lives too.
Absolutely. So, okay, right here, right where you are right now, what is the most important thing in life to you?
Well, maybe it sounds corny to say it's the moment. Maybe it sounds corny to say it's love. But those two things, when they come together, are rather important to me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The experience of the moment, of being present, you know, that what I learned in the second near-death experience, that each of these moments of our life contains pretty much everything. And if we are present for it in such a way that we can open-heartedly express and engage with the field of love, then, you know, we experience this fulfillment and we are capable of doing so much for other people and for our world too.
Absolutely. Love is the answer and love will lead you home. For sure.
So simple, isn't it?
So simple. Well, yes, what? In theory, it is.
Yeah. This life is about removing
you can let go
the
of
obstacles,
ego.
I think, right? That's
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
That's an obstacle.
Simple.
I think
yeah,
it really is about trying our best to remove the obstacles to love, kind of flowing in and around and up from underneath and through.
Absolutely. To be in the flow, and it feels so good. So,
right.
The big question, do you believe in reincarnation?
Well, sure, yeah, I
okay.
do.
I was hoping probably, that would be your answer.
Right, yeah. I don't see how not.
It could not be. Thank you.
Right. I mean, that's kind of what everything is all about. And even reincarnation on this personal level of just changing from day to day, too, of being reborn in a moment into a new part of our life. But from life to life, I sure think that it's clearly the case. I mean,
Absolutely.
You know, when you see these, when you see people like Mozart, for example, who are writing concertos when they're 5 years old or whatever.
That's an old soul.
You didn't really, yeah, you didn't learn how to do that, you know, between 2 and 4.
You know, previous so life, seems, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
It seems pretty clearly that that's the case to me.
Yeah. And I write,
every religion basically has it in it. You know, it's only Christianity kind of cleaned it out, but it's still sort of the basis of, you know, resurrection and the like. I mean, there really are very few profound beliefs in human history that don't embrace reincarnation in one sense or another.
Yeah, you know, and, well, we could have a whole conversation on religion, but so many of them, especially Christianity, really formed to control the masses. And so there are lots of things that they don't want you to know. And so we'll leave it at that. But definitely we have reincarnated many times, in many lifetimes, and all sorts of amazing experiences. And quite honestly, those things that have happened in those lifetimes that have not been resolved, we take on those things, and that's really where we are today. I know a lot of my clients, I deal with past lives and healing those traumatic experiences that are still causing issues right now, right where we are. And as we clear those things, amazing results. And that's a part of the process of letting go and surrendering, is letting go of those things at all of those levels of our experience and existence. It's really important that we do that.
Right, yeah. And, you know, if you want to get scientific about it in a nuts and bolts sort of way, it's like the first law of thermodynamics, right, that energy never really goes away. It just changes forms.
Yes,
right?
So true, yep.
And so we really are, in my experience, quite clearly we're these kind of energetic beings, in our basis. And so we're carrying these energies of our experiences along with us, and they are, you know, coming up from our psyches and going to work in our imaginations and forming the lives that we're making for ourselves. And so we need to be present for these experiences so that we can learn what we need to learn from them.
Absolutely. So let me just ask you to give out the name of your book and where we can find it, because we have a few more moments, a few minutes, and I want to make sure everyone knows the name of your book and how they can get a hold of it.
Sure. It's called How to Survive Life and Death, and the publisher tagged on A Guide for Happiness in This World and Beyond. It's quite descriptive. It's available pretty much everywhere, you know, all the main places, all the big places online and stuff. I do like to recommend asking for it at your local bookstore if they don't have it, because I think we should patronize our local bookstores. They're such a wonderful gift. I also have a blog that's robertkopecky.blogspot.com, where I write about a lot of spirituality, and my stuff appears in a number of places, BeliefNet and Gaiam TV and Soul Lifetimes. The Mindful Word pops up here and there.
Wonderful.
Look around for it, yeah.
Very cool. So you also talk about animals. So would you share a little bit about the consciousness of animals?
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, it's kind of part and parcel of what we've been talking about all along. I really do feel that consciousness, in a way, is this field that we engage with, that we participate, that we share, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that slowly but surely, humans are starting to realize. I mean, especially if you're on Facebook and you see all the videos that people share of animals exhibiting great amounts of consciousness and intelligence. In the human form that I'm in, I'm capable of engaging in the field of consciousness with the tools that I have and the filters that I have. The same is true of every life form. Trees, animals, amphibians, whatever, right? We're all engaging into this field of consciousness that we are sharing. Extended tests on testing on on dolphins and porpoises has ended up with them being considered a non-human form of intelligence. You know, they're like as smart as we are, except for they have a whole different set of tools. My wife is a Sue Pike, is called the animal talker. She's an animal communicator. And so right here at home, I'm constantly getting evidence of animal consciousness. And I think that people are slowly but surely beginning to realize the role, the karmatic role that our animal partners play in our life, and the profound intelligence and connectedness with the divine that animals have.
Have, absolutely.
And so, you know, I'm a vegetarian.
Yes.
Needless to say. Right.
Yeah, I would have
I
to agree with
before.
That.
I wasn't before. I wasn't for many years, but, you know, this is all happening.
Yeah, it's all about the evolution of us, right?
Right.
I know
our
for me it was
evolution.
So funny, as I was waking in this process of awakening, one morning went to the kitchen to prepare breakfast, and an outside voice said, "No more meat," and I stopped and became a vegetarian that day.
There it is.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
There's the transformative moment. It's right there. It can be right there.
Mm-hmm.
It can happen just like that. That's a beautiful thing.
You just have to be willing. When you truly recognize that you're a spiritual being and that you're here to stand in your power, the guidance will come. Just listen. And and it's that easy. Just pay attention.
Yeah, meditation has been a big part of it for me, because it's allowed me to sequester the just sort of, you know, the random sequential thinking, the thought process, from that intuitive intelligence that arises from a deeper place.
Yes.
And when we're able to be present for life that way, you'll suddenly, like you just mentioned, you'll find yourself in a bubble of grace, right? And you'll say, hey, this is a bubble of grace. I'm going to do what I can do here that I've never been able to do before.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
You know?
And yeah, meditation, key. I do it every day, and it's so amazing. It's so amazing and so beautiful to truly be able to connect. Yeah, nothing better.
And just to backtrack real quickly to wrap up a thought about death, because the book is in a lot of ways about death. You know, it's... I try to make it the funnest book that you've ever read about death. But in that moment, if you've ever experienced it, as we most of us have or will at some point in our life, and witness the passing of a beloved pet or a member of our family, you can recognize that as being one of those bubbles of grace that's very profound on an energetic level, where you are there and completely attached by your heart to this occasion of great reverence, you know. And it really is a divine moment when we witness this kind of matriculation from this world to another. And so when we remain engaged with our hearts at that level, then we can also sense that death is not final. And we can sit in meditation and pray or commune with the spirits of those we've lost, and they can take up residence in our heart and be there just as surely as they were in life. Obviously not physically, but
emotionally,
they are there for us. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I visit with my dad that way. I want to thank you, Robert. This has been just delightful and informative, and it really removes the fear of death.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Aziz. It's been a great, great pleasure to speak with you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Affirmations for Living with Edwige. Join us again next week, Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the BBS Radio Network, and visit my Facebook page, download my app, Awakened, and visit my website, affirmationsforliving.net. And remember, be the change that you want to see. Until next time, this is Reverend Dr. Edwige. Namaste.